there is no organization in the breast cancer space, nonprofit, that is focused on South Asians.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Identity Unveiled. We are a lifestyle platform that discusses career, beauty, and health. Our platform supports the advancement of Asian American women to the executive ranks.
So this month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And Asian Americans are the first U.S. racial demographic population to experience cancer as the leading cause of death for both men and women. And according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the incidence of breast control among Asian American women has increased by 10% over the past decade. In fact, now breast cancer accounts for 35% of all new cancers among Asian American women. Now, as some of us who are Asian may be familiar with, there's this like cultural taboo that many of us feel that it's difficult to talk about mental and physical health. And those taboos can make it very hard for Asian American women to talk about their own breast cancer and to really receive the support they need. So here at IU, we felt it fitting to talk about those barriers that can hold back women from getting that support and really building that awareness about breast cancer. So joining again today is Benita, has an accomplished career as an executive within the integrated healthcare system space. And 7 years after her diagnosis, today she is a breast cancer survivor and advocate. Welcome, Benita.
Thank you so much, and I'm pleased to be here.
Well, I'd love to hear your story. Let's start out, Benita, with your background. Tell us about your diagnosis and when you found out.
So I was 54 years old, and in early 2016, I was just going for my routine mammogram. And so the physician said they saw something, and they asked me to come back and have some repeated testing. And I went ahead and did that. And so for the next few weeks, as I was going back for repeated testing, I was really unconcerned. There was just no family history of cancer in my family and no family history of any extended illness. But I worked in healthcare, so I was familiar with medical terminology and then the importance of continued testing. And so I went ahead and had that. But by that time, I'd had about 10 or 12 years of clear mammograms. And I was in good health. So one thing that's a twist, and this is also coming up in the breast cancer space, is that I have dense breasts. And a year or two prior to that, I was starting to receive letters that my breasts were dense. And so that was what precipitated the additional testing back in early 2016. So when my surgeon called, the OBGYN actually called me on a Saturday morning. I thought, oh, this is great. She's working, you know, early on a Saturday, and she's calling to tell me that everything's okay. Well, I was absolutely stunned when the words that she said was, "You have cancer." And it was never anything that I expected. It was in total disbelief. You feel as if the floor just falls out from under you. And I just, you know, you have multiple thoughts going on in your head simultaneously, and they range from what's going to happen to me. And I was concerned my son was then 11. What's going to happen to my son? How am I going to tell my husband, who himself is a cancer survivor and who earlier a couple of years had lost his brother after only a few months of being diagnosed with cancer?
Just the fact that there was no family history. And I think there's a lot of, maybe it's a myth out there that you have to have some form of family history to get cancer.
And that's true. They're finding out more and more now in this day and age that women that are presenting themselves and receiving the cancer diagnosis do not have a family history. But some of that is for us being South Asians. It's also the fact that my entire relatives are in India. There is no collection of a database. There are no research studies going on. So I don't know. And that is something that's happening to immigrant populations in this country, is that they don't have the history of their extended relatives and their families back in their countries of origin. So for us, it's a dual-fold reason. More and more women are getting it here in this country, and yet we are all unaware of our family histories.
So true. So it is a big kind of black box for us that we don't know truly what our history is. So you find out, you get the call on a Saturday morning. It's disbelief. Now, at this point, you have a son, and you mentioned your husband had also gone through a cancer diagnosis. How did you approach this conversation with your son?
We talked about cancer in the family. I work in healthcare, so it's not unusual for us to have medical decisions. I come from a family of physicians. My husband has physicians on his side. So medical topics and terminology are again known in our family. Cancer was a sticky issue because, as I mentioned, my husband's brother had passed away a couple years earlier, and that affected my husband and his siblings. So it was just difficult for me to tell my husband that weekend that I was diagnosed with cancer. And then because our son knew that daddy was a cancer survivor, that daddy had cancer and he had seen what had happened to his uncle, we made the decision to not tell my son at that time.
How old was he?
He was 11. And there were multiple factors. It was the family history. And it was also the fact for me, I was a big proponent of that, because I'd actually had friends a few years earlier where the mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And the husband, who himself was a physician, said, you know, they did not tell their children. And the reason being, he said, when he was young, his mother was diagnosed with an illness and he was 8 or 10, and life just became about her and her illness. And it was something that affected him for the rest of his life. So then that conversation just came to the forefront of my mind, along with what was in our family, my husband's family history of cancer. And I just said, there's no point in telling him now. We did not know my prognosis. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And also, I wanted to have my son to have as much of a normal life as possible. And so we just refrained. And if we did slip into talking about cancer or medical topics, it was such a normal part of our conversation anyway, that my son did pick up on it. So if I said I had an appointment to go to, it was just like, I have a meeting with a doctor. That's fine.
I just want to comment real quick. I thought it was interesting. You said how the illness can kind of take over the entire family. And no one really thinks of that complexity. You know, you hear unfortunate things like families falling apart or divorces happening because, and then you're thinking, why would you get a divorce during cancer or after cancer, right? But this is another side. It's a very complex dynamic for the family.
Absolutely, it is. You know, you have a spouse. There's additional help that you yourself need now having a cancer diagnosis. So you need and sometimes there are situations where families are not set up to provide that support. So we did not have my immediate family in the region, but we did have friends. And so I really enlisted their support and just simple things like picking up and dropping off my son from school or taking him to activities, just simple daily life things where I was always available, but now I was not so available. Or if I wasn't feeling well, somebody needed to pitch in. And so that was important. And then fortunately for me, my husband has always been a help in our family activities, and he just pitched in a little bit more. And so it worked. It worked in our case, but it doesn't work without thinking. And every day, you know, what if you have an appointment at that time? Son has to be somewhere. Every day you're managing what's going to happen in those 24 hours.
What about when it comes to your friends? I see this is incredible how you talk about the family dynamic. Did you tell your friends?
We only told selected family and selected friends. And the friends that I told were mostly our school friends, the moms, I would say, and a few of my own close family, our family friends. And that was just so people did drop off food, and the parents helped, again, managing my son and his activities, you know, taking him along or picking him up or whatever we needed to do. And that was also because I look back and I don't know which one of these factors impacted me, but I do know myself. And I know that for me, again, because I wanted to have or present a normal life as possible, and you don't have the bandwidth to discuss cancer, 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 every single minute of the day. You have enough between all of a sudden your life has exploded where doctor's appointments and testing and you're not sure of all this decision making you have to make. So you are already having to learn a basically a new topic immediately. And then you don't have the bandwidth to explain it to well-meaning people. Everybody on the street, well, how are you doing? Well, yeah, I don't know how I'm doing. You know, I don't know how I'm feeling. And have to repeat that repeatedly throughout the day. I just couldn't handle it. So I had to focus on my health care and my self-care, which was body, mind, and soul for me. And that was what how I approached it.
There is this fear that, you know, and to your point, like you wanted to surround yourself with people who were going to keep you in this mindset to help you get through what you were going through. What's the best way for friends to support a friend that's going through breast cancer?
Ask the person what they need. There were, you know, friends that I knew that were great cooks, just bring food, just drop off. Just that's what they could do. That's what they were comfortable with. That's what I needed from them. Other friends where it wasn't a hindrance. You know, we live in Los Angeles. You can't ask somebody to drive 40 minutes to pick up and drop off. But if somebody was going in that direction, they could do that. So I think the best thing is just ask the person, what is it they need? You know, I had a friend who was a very busy parent, a mom and ever professional. What she did was one of the best things for me was this was a mom. We walked together every Saturday morning and I couldn't walk anymore. I live in the mountains. We walked up the hill. I couldn't do that, but she picked me up every Saturday and we drove to the flats of LA and we just walked and we did that for a year. And that's what I needed. And it was just like, okay, that's what she had time for. That's what she could do. And that fit me. So that I would say the best thing is just ask the person.
So the other thing is just this fear, like when people know, it's like people are just talking and gossiping. So how did you keep it under wraps?
I didn't tell the Indian community. The people that I think that would talk and say something's wrong with her, what happened to the family, you know, in our community, thoughts like that pop out. Some vocalize it, some don't. I do have Indian friends, but they are Indian American. So I knew that judgment may or may not have been there, but pretty much wasn't there. They're like me, like they were helpful. And I didn't tell the extended community.
Why you don't want to spread this to the Indian community? What would they say about you that would be detrimental?
I'm going to speak in general terms, you know, but there's a cultural taboo. First of all, it's your breasts. You don't talk about body parts. It's women. So you're just talking about breast cancer. And then, you know, in our community, there's always, what are people going to think? You know, people are going to talk. What are they going to think about you? Oh, did you do something bad to get that? There's all these cultural taboos. There's all this thinking that's just hard to explain to a non-Asian person. But that's how the community thinks and talks and reacts. And I didn't, and that was not going to be helpful to me. So there was no point in telling people who at that point you're forming your own care team and your own personal support team. And so I would think you have to be selfish. And if that was not beneficial to you, why bother? I didn't need to go there for that reason.
I think what's amazing is you use the word selfish and you had to be selfish in this moment to take care of you. That's really hard, especially in our culture and for Asian women.
Yes, that is absolutely true. And I have spoken with Asian women who do not have that support at home, but I am not married to an Asian man. My husband is white. And when I tell people how much help, and he's a professional man, from day one, he has helped in the house. There has never been a discussion. That, well, I would say on my part, there has been a discussion, but I know that I have it much better than a lot of women out there from any culture. So that was just not an issue for me. I had that help and support and I could ask for when I needed it more. And if We couldn't provide it. We had the means to get the help.
I had a friend, a very close friend of mine, who really was very private about her diagnosis, more so that she just didn't want her employer to, you know, just to take a hit on her career promotion and moving up. Did you tell your employer that you had cancer?
Yes, in selective people. But again, I'm very lucky. I work in healthcare. And so there is definitely an understanding. So I had to tell, I told just a few people that needed to know, but I was in a, you know, I was in my mid 50s at that time of diagnosis, different stage, different age of life. I was working for a firm that was very entrepreneurial. I had left the corporate setting in healthcare for prior to that. And so I had a lot of flexibility, and the fact that I was working with doctors that just afforded me a great deal of support. And I took the time that I needed. And the other thing that I was doing at that time, and my own feelings about where I wanted to go with my professional career, were working itself out. And so that's why I was working for this healthcare tech company. I'd also started classes back at UCLA because I wanted to get into the nonprofit world in healthcare and raise money and do advocacy work. And I wasn't sure where that was going. So that was something that was known, that was already on my plate. Breast cancer just threw a twist to it all. But again, I had the support from these various groups.
It's been 7 years. How long has it been since your diagnosis?
Correct. 7.5 years.
So what are you doing now with regards to prevention? Has the way what you eat, how you exercise, your outlook on life, how has that changed?
You know, I was always very conscious of maintaining good health. I suffer from ailments and just various ailments throughout my life. And so I was always focused in just maintaining my body, my mind, my soul. And so, you know, I work out, I do yoga, I do Pilates, I meditate. I already had a team. I had knowledge, again, being in healthcare. I saw what worked for me, and I knew how to manage the other ailments that I had. So with the team, I just upped my game. Already had a holistic approach, and we just took it to the new level of, you read things about what are foods that are good, you know, for cancer patients. Just worked out a little bit more when I could, because I was fatigued. As I said, I couldn't walk. I was just so fatigued from the radiation. And so I had to manage what I could do, but I always knew that it was important for me to do something.
What is it that others don't know about breast cancer that you would like to talk about?
Well, there are a lot of dialogues surrounding breast cancer. There's research, there's testing, there's treatment, there's survivorships. But what's been important to me, and which is why I started my advocacy work, is I'd like to see more representation in the media with different groups of people. You know, we spoke about this a little earlier on about the cultural taboos in certain cultures and our South Asian cultures. We just don't see enough people, whether it's ads on TV, or whether it's these organizations. Do you realize there is no organization in the breast cancer space, nonprofit, that is focused on South Asians? And so, you know, there are organizations, Jewish organizations, there's organizations for Black people, there's organizations for Latino people. There is no organization for South Asians at all here in this country. And so those are not faces that you see. And just when you think about addressing like gene therapy, you know, is there some genetic basis to breast cancer or any cancer that we have? We don't know because there hasn't been research. And so those are areas that I'd like to see addressed, is that I'd like our community to step up and participate in research, clinical research, basic research, just do surveys or anything, talking about lifestyle, talking about getting support from within the community. If you can't get it from your family, can other community members offer support for you? You know, how do you tell your children? Things like that. We just need to be out there. We need to be vocal. We need to participate. And that's a big area that I see that needs to be addressed. The flip side of that, because of the work that I've done in healthcare, is that large healthcare companies, pharmaceuticals, and the greater healthcare industry sees a need for that. They have just been unable to penetrate some of these ethnic groups because of the reluctance of people, leaders coming up and talking about it and saying, yeah, it is in our community. We need to talk about it so that the next person can step up and say, I have it. I'm going to participate in research. I'm going to help somebody. What surprised me, as I mentioned, I did not tell a lot of people, the few South Asian women that I told, I was surprised how somebody would whisper to me and say, I've had that 10 years ago. Nobody except my immediate family knows I had it twice. I just got a recurrence. I've had another type of cancer 3 times. I was shocked at the whispers that I got from other women, South Asian women, that said, it happened to me, or I'm going through it now. I didn't know who to talk to. So it's out there. And the hospitals that are addressing these the research or the surveys or the socioeconomic portions of it or any part of it, they're just not getting enough of us to step forward. And so I'd like to see that. I'd like to see our community step forward so we can work together with the industry to address areas of research, areas of finances, areas of support, or anything. And we should have an organization that's dedicated for us.
And then post-cancer, what has been the most significant change you've made?
Well, it has to do with the stage and age that I am. I'm in my next decade of life. My son, we just settled him in school in Cambridge. So that's a happy story. I've become more conscious of what I want to do. And so this advocacy work has become very important to me. I've been featured in national media. And so that is something that I feel that if I can be a face now and talk about breast cancer, I'm going to do that. And spending more time just with family and friends and travel. And so I'm just focused on me because I now have the ability and I'm at that age and stage where I can do that.
I do want to talk to you about your advocacy work in a minute. I'm curious though, and this question came from a friend of mine. What is it that made you want to go towards the ad? Like, why is not every woman who has breast cancer an advocate? What is it about you that, you know, you went into the advocacy space?
I wish I had a good answer for that. I don't, because if anybody knew me about 3 years earlier, I'm a very private person. As I mentioned, I did not tell people and anything in life, but we don't talk about it. My husband and I are very much under the radar of anything social, anything out there. And the story is things pop up in my head. And it was just about 2 years ago this time, there was an ad I saw that was looking for Let's Make a Deal for breast cancer survivors. And it just popped in my head like, wow, I can do that. I'm a breast cancer survivor. I can go on the show. And I auditioned and I got selected. And I was on the show and I wore my pink sari because they asked us to wear pink. And I was like, I'm Indian. I've got a pink sari. And I won prizes, played a game. And that just started it. And then I started talking about it. And one thing led to another, more opportunities, more people approaching me. I'm comfortable. Yeah, I'm comfortable where I am physically. I'm comfortable where I am mentally, emotionally. As I said, my son is settled, as I see, you know, and I feel that now is my time.
Do you find it therapeutic?
I found it therapeutic when I was going through my cancer support to listen to other people's stories. And I think you're right that may be why I'm hoping that my story and my being out there can be therapeutic for other people.
So let's talk about the advocacy work you're doing. I did actually see your latest work with Katie Couric. So tell us about, you know, what you're doing, where you're involved.
So I'm involved in a number of different areas. I'm an ambassador with American Cancer Society, and I've gone up to the Capitol here in California, Sacramento, because there's different aspects of breast cancer. That aspect specifically is because during my treatment, I had the opportunity to participate or to elect to undergo testing, genomic testing, which was not approved clinically, and my insurance company would not pay for it. So when I elected to have that testing done to inform my treatment plan, I paid out of pocket. So American Cancer Society is now working, again, this is 7 years later, has been working for a number of years to get state legislatures to pass laws that enforce healthcare payers to cover certain types of testing. And one of those is the testing that I elected to do to pay out of pocket for, which informed my treatment plan. So that's one story I have. And that's a very important story to tell people. And that gets into health science and advocacy, but it also gets into the financial considerations for healthcare. As we know, there could be a lot of out-of-pocket. So I do a lot of work with them for that reason. And then, as I mentioned, the Let's Make a Deal, they were promote breast cancer awareness during October. So I was happy to participate in that. And then Exact Sciences is a genomic company, which actually makes one of the tests, the genomic test that I had. So I become a spokesperson for them to encourage people of all different races and show representation and talk about how that testing that I elected to pay for out of pocket informed and changed my whole treatment plan with cancer. And then let's see. Parade magazine featured me in their national publication, talking about everything from a South Asian woman having breast cancer to my story, my journey, my testing, my outcomes, and how I'm living life. And then I actually coordinated, conceptualized the first South Asian webinar that we recently held a few months ago with the South Asian American Policy and Research Institute, which was based in Chicago. They are a nonprofit institute. But, you know, as I was looking for, how do we get South Asian voices out there? And so they were very considerate and partnered with me. And we held the first webinar featuring only South Asian women. And we got to tell our stories. And I thought that was very important. And we have that to share. And then Katie Couric Media, as you know, Katie Couric herself was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so there's been different stories I've done with them, just talking about my journey as a woman with breast cancer. And part of it was the genomic testing that I had. And then recently, just a few weeks ago, they unveiled another story in Katie Couric Media talking about what I wish I'd known when I had breast cancer. And I was also one of the featured patients. So again, there's different aspects to the whole breast cancer story. And I've spoken with them in a number of national publications and media.
What do you wish you'd known?
What you wish you'd known, and this stuff, is that how much support that you need. And I think everybody talks about that. I was pretty strong, and I am pretty strong and pretty contained. And I mean, I thought I worked in healthcare. We have a family I could talk to. I have physicians, friends from whom I got a second opinion. I thought I was good. And it was a friend of mine and a friend of my husband's that for months were telling me, both of us, that I needed to get to a cancer support community. And I finally did 9 months later. And I will tell you, I just did not know how emotionally and physically drained I was, because I was holding it together for me, but for everybody else around me, you know, as I was coordinating life and household and son and activity and then my appointments and testing and learning everything. And when I cross, and I would tell them every time I crossed the threshold into the garden, I just felt like I could get let go. And I had trained professionals with whom I could talk to about my vulnerabilities. I had two, the left brain, the right brain. One side of the brain was rational. You're going through this. This is what you need to do for life. You got it. You know, this is next, dinner, tennis lessons, whatever. The other part of the life was why is this happening to me? The emotional turmoil, which I was feeling every minute of the day. What's going to happen, because cancer can recur, because you may not have a positive outcome. Also, I was in excruciating pain. I suffered side effects from all the therapies I had taken. And I had to have infusions to monitor those side effects. And then the infusions had side effects. So there's a lot going on in this space. And the support that I got from that team was just invaluable. So I always tell people, you need to ensure that your medical team is there and you have full confidence. And then you need to put your personal support team together, which includes caregivers for you.
So as an advocate today, when a woman comes and whispers in your ear, what do you say about those whispers? Is there something you say to them when they're whispering? Do you encourage them to not whisper?
You listen. You know, everybody isn't ready. I wasn't ready. So I'm certainly not one to push. You listen and you talk, and at the relief, and as you mentioned, the therapeutic feeling someone gets, you the look in both of your eyes, you've been there. It could be they have a different diagnosis, they have a different setup at home, you've been there. You know those thoughts that are circulating in each other's heads, because there's always that uncertainty. And even now, there's always, it can come back, it can have this. So you listen and you talk. And then you just figure out where you want to go from there. And then, of course, I do say, well, there's a survey you might want to participate in. It's anonymous. Maybe have you thought about testing? Have you thought about, you know, research? Have you thought about that? But that comes with time and with knowing.
Well, thank you, Panita, for being a trailblazing AAPI voice for cancer and fighting for a cancer diagnosis is more than just radiation. It's advocacy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.